Toby, you are currently riding along in a van with your brother. Things have taken a dreadfully morbid turn, a murderously one, in fact, as you have just helped with the evisceration and dismemberment of a victim. One of this gang's prey has not only been killed, you suppose, by your brother, but also you've assisted in defiling the corpse. But it doesn't seem that their journey is over. You have become locked somewhat in your PTSD, combined with a sense of relief. You're with your brother and you never want to let him go. And yet, obviously, of course, on some level, you are aware that what you are doing is by no means humanly proper. Ken passes you his hunting knife, just in case you lost your own.
I'll accept the knife. Thanks. Yeah, I might need that.
We've taken down four now. The other group's taken down four or five. Soon as we get to 13, the big 13, that's it. That's it, we're done. Shun no more.
So just a little bit more then. Just a little bit more, yeah?
Not too much, not too much. Need to return this place to... Oh, send this place to a state of grace. We need to make our lives better. As we've been promised, like you've been promised, haven't you? You've received the promise too. That your life will be better if you do what she said.
Yeah, she promised I'd be able to forget about it all. All the nightmares, all the shit that we have to deal with. It'll be gone, it'll be a new start.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's what's been going around my head as well, brother. I've been thinking about it a long time. Things I would have done different if I could go back, if I could change things. If I could have not signed the dotted line, enlisted, if I could have done better at school, if I could have been kinder to this boy or that girl. Might have earned Dad's love and respect. There's lots of things I wish I had done differently. I mean, I was trying to reach out to you. I was taken away, Toba. I went walking one night after we'd been camping and ended up somewhere else. It felt like a different place, different time. Didn't feel like Devonsport as we knew it, and that's where I met her, and she was strong and she was reassuring, and she told me that everything would be all right. I just had to do what she said, and God, I believed her, and I still do. There's got to be something better for all of us, especially you and me, than all this. You know, there has to be, doesn't there?
Yeah, there will be. There will be. We've deserved it. We've worked so hard for so long, suffered so much, and now we will get what we deserve. We'll get the new start. We'll be able to forget about all those mistakes, all those horrible injustices that were done against us. It'll all be someone else's life. We will have something new, something better, and it'll be the two of us together. We can figure things out. We can build a new life here and find happiness, you know? Like, happiness. I don't know when the last time you felt that was, but it sure has been a while for me.
He smiles at that nervously, puts his hand on your wrist, gives you a squeeze, and says, "It won't be long. Just imagine if we can forget everything and just go back to a time when we were happy and not weighed down with all this guilt and shame."
Yeah, like when we were kids, playing with G.I. Joes in the forest.
Yeah, yeah. Snake Eyes and all the rest.
Yeah. it can be like that again. I mean, you know, not all the way like that. We're not kids anymore, obviously, but, you know, it can be carefree in that way.
Yeah. He checks his watch, which is the face of which is on the inside of his wrist, and looks at it, looks to you. It's nearly time. And then you hear a call from up the front of the van, the woman that you saw before. We're almost here. We're going to pull over. Then it'll be straight home invasion. No time now to sneak our way in. You feel the van pulling up. We're not going to be playing this subtle. We're going to be breaking in, taking down the target, moving on to the next one. Got that?
Got it.
Yep. Yep. This one's Matt Lamer. Do you know Matt Lamer?
Do I know Matt Lamer?
Yeah, he's the owner and manager of the local bank. You don't know him well. You know who he is as a member of the community.
It's not really going to be real anyways when all this is said and done, you know? So it's just do it and then won't remember a thing later.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's it. He pats you on the arm, slides open the panel on the side of the van. Come on, let's move.
And I follow. I'm kind of hesitating a little bit. I mean, I've talked myself into this. Talked myself into believing that this is the right thing to do, that this is truly a chance to have a new life, to... I mean, anything has to be better than what I've gone through. And she was there. This isn't like how things are normally. Maybe it will actually work. And Ken is here. I mean, what's the option? Go against him? Go against the only one in my family who's ever been kind to me? No, I'll be here with him. I'll do this. I'll just try to put my mind away. Just try and put it in a corner and just go in and do this with military efficiency.
Could you make a perception roll, please?
6.
The house, as you approach it, this isn't the kind of place, not that you're particularly au fait with raiding people's suburban houses, but you can see there's a security camera on the porch. There's signs up, this place is monitored by security. There's a beware of the dog sign. It all puts you in a frame of mind that this isn't a place you just want to run into and go in guns blazing or blades flashing in the night. But then again, that's what your brothers said. That's what the drivers said, that this is just going to be a simple in and out. So, to be honest, you don't have any better alternatives.
No, I don't. And, you know, sometimes when people put up all those kinds of signs and stuff, sometimes it's just, you know, decoys and it's just about making the place seem scarier than it actually is. Sometimes the ones who speak the biggest game are the weakest, actually. So maybe this is nothing. Just do this. I mean, come on, we're soldiers. What's a bank guy going to be able to do against us?
As you're saying that to yourself, you see Ken zips up his parka really very tight so that you can only just see his eyes. His voice is now muffled. He looks at you. You can see there's panic in his eyes. They're watering. And he says, I'm going to knock the door. Soon as someone goes to it, you shoulder it open.
All right.
Bam, 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 bam! He hammers on the door.
I listen for footsteps on the other side.
You hear footsteps approach, and then you hear a woman's voice. Who is it?
And I'll just do it. I don't think, I just do. That's easier than thinking about what it is I'm doing.
Go for violence.
6 plus 3, 9.
9. You badly hurt your shoulder as you ram your way through the door, which is a solid piece of wood, but you're pumped with something like adrenaline and maybe something a little more infernal than that. Can you give yourself a wound, please? You may have dislocated it. Ken doesn't stop, however. With the door open, he marches straight forward, and you see a woman stood there. You recognise her. It's the banker's wife, Geraldine. You've seen her in the bars sometimes, just around town. She's another member of the high society in Devonsport. Ken doesn't go to murder her. He grabs her by the neck, then with his other hand grabs her wrists, forces her down to the ground onto her knees, and then slams her face into the wooden floor. You hear a shout from the living room. Hey, what's going on? Ken looks at you, his eyes still wild. That's all you can see through that small gap in his parka coat, and he says, get him! Bring him to the kitchen table!
And I rush towards where the voice was coming from, my shoulder still hurting like hell. I am trying my hardest to not think about what it is that I'm doing, and I just rush towards the voice.
You see, Matt Lamer is already working a safe in the wall, presumably where some liberal like him keeps a handgun. You're going to charge him?
Yeah, I'm going to charge him and try and push him into the wall, try to incapacitate him.
Okay, you're going to have a modifier here, but make a violence roll, please, because his back is largely to you. He can't fight back while he's working a safe combination.
That is a 15.
A 15, well, in that case, yes, no dreadful result here at all. You're able to slam him into the wall, into the front of the safe. It knocks him cold temporarily. You doing as asked? You going to carry him, slash drag him to the kitchen table?
Yeah, I begin dragging him across the floor, holding both of his arms, and just drag him to where Ken asked me to get him to.
Ken is there with you. Presumably Geraldine is unconscious. And now the woman from the van joins you as well. Ken looks at you, says, do you want to do it or do you just want to hold him?
I'll hold him if it's all right.
That's fine. We'll need to hold him. He'll wake up during this. In that case, you go to his shoulders, Ken to his ankles. The woman brings forth her own blade and starts cutting into the man's abdomen. It's a grotesque sight. There's no getting around that as she starts disemboweling him. He does, of course, come back to consciousness. His screams are dreadful. You're instinctively drawn to putting your hand over his mouth to subdue it, to not draw attention. Ken, his wavering gaze fixes on you at that point. Says, no, let the screams out.
Yeah, I just do as he says.
And gosh, does he scream. There's moments where he passes out of consciousness and then returns to it because of the agony of having one's intestines removed loop by loop. Could I ask from you at this point, and this is quite an important one, firstly, you're going to drop instability at this point, regardless of what you roll. But what we're going to determine is how much stability you lose. Could you make a willpower roll, please?
15.
Very, very good. In that case, I give you the choice. Technically, you could just drop down to the next level of stability. So if you're already on uneasy or unfocused, you drop to shaken. If you're on shaken, distressed, and neurotic, you drop to anxious, for instance. If you want to drop down two, you can. At this point, your character is on a fast track to losing himself entirely, participating in this kind of brutality. So it's really your choice, but it's up to you how much control you decide to maintain.
I don't think that Toby can really maintain control here. I think that I begin disassociating myself from what it is that I'm doing. I mean, I have stated my reasons for why this makes sense, but actually being here, actually doing it to these innocent people, it's very, very difficult to stay sane through that. So I think I hide in that little corner in my mind where I can just look at what's happening from the outside and not have to be there fully. I think that's what I do. I think that takes me down to some kind of broken state.
I think you're probably right. Very appropriate. As you detach entirely, retreat into that corner of your mind, you realize that the symbol that the woman keeps carving into his abdomen and is quickly filling up with more blood and viscera, so you can only just see it for a fraction before she starts cutting it out again, is one of those key-like symbols that you've seen before on houses, on photographs, sketches that have been around town. As you stare at it, she looks at you and she says, "You've seen it, haven't you? Yes, yes, you're ready now. Everyone marked with the symbol is marked by grace. They are our sacrifices. I didn't think you were ready for this, but Ken thought you would be. So glad that you're with us. Grace will be so glad that you're with us." Let's move on. Let's go to Sylvia. Sylvia, after the woefully attended funeral of your grandson, for obvious reasons, your son has been detained after being implicated in a murder.
Yeah.
A murder for which you feel strangely proud. You are left outside the church with no one around you except for your mother, who seems to have enjoyed the entire affair, not really having a clue as to what's going on. And Devonsport, as you can see it from where you are, is barren. Usually there's traffic flowing, or there's people milling about. Even here in the outskirts, you will be able to see some signs of life, but right now Devonsport looks just as much a cemetery as the patch of grass and headstones behind you. There's not even a breeze in the air, it's just still and warm and uncomfortable. "Are we going home now, dear?"
I have got to go to the office. I got some work to do. Would you like to perhaps sit in the sun for a bit?
"Oh, I can do that. Yes, that would be nice. What, you want me to stay here?"
"There's a nice bench up there in the cemetery, if you'd like to sit.
I'll have a nice sit down. You get to work. I know how important it is to you."
"I'll pick you up a bit later, okay? And perhaps we can go and have a nice lunch together."
That sounds lovely, dear."
"Great. All right. Well, I'll see you soon, Mother."
"I'll see you soon, love." She blows you a kiss and goes tottering off toward the park bench.
I wink at her. Then I shake off that feeling of familiarity and friendship as I now have something I have to do. I'm going to drive back to my company office, to Inzio Construction. I don't intend to announce my coming more than I've already done through my text to my secretary this morning. I think they'll know that I'm coming. And when it comes to Catherine, she doesn't concern me anymore. When I was upset before, when I was upset and called her about my Henry, I think about this as I go to the car. I remember her. She was giggling. There was someone else there, and she didn't listen. She didn't care. As long as she had her own little spun sugar world of happiness with Scott, she didn't care at all. Why should I be there for her now? whatever my son has done, it won't make a difference either. He's his own person. If he's manned up, then all the better for him. I start laughing to myself as I reach the car and go in. I feel like myself, you know. I feel pretty good. I feel like I'm on my own person. I'm sharp. I've got an assignment. I've got something to do. I look at my reflection in the rear view mirror.
You look mostly together. More so than you have done in quite some time, in fact. Your appearance bears out your feelings. Yes, you know that underneath the clothes you've got these strange wounds. Scabs, really. But they're not visible. And there's something to be said for keeping your woes, your traumas, your anxieties hidden. You've always been very good at that. Maintaining a veneer of power, respectability, function. And right now, you look like the Sylvia Spears that would put any other lawyer in the city on their heels. Yeah, you are confident enough about marching into Inzio Construction.
And considering what I've been through, that feels pretty remarkable to me. There has to be a reason for it. There has to be a reason why I came out like this. Because I'm simply not done. And there's one way that I believe in that I can bring Henry back. I look damn good, I do. I think to myself as I slam the car door and start driving.
You're not the only person on their way to Inzio Construction at this time. In fact, Dwayne McLean is also en route with his daughter. While Dwayne is still wrapped in gauze in most places, having suffered burns all over his body and a blindness in one eye, barely leaving him recognizable for now. His car is recognizable. It seems Carol Wentz drove his old squad car to the hospital to visit him, and that's where the two of them now are, making their way to Inzio Construction, where Dwayne has insisted they go. He kept saying that she's the key. And so, Sylvia, as you pass an intersection, you notice the unmistakable sight of Dwayne's squad car. There's a very petty part of you that remembers, and it's not that long ago, and of all the injustices you've suffered, it's a pretty small one, but it wasn't that long ago that Dwayne stole your car. What the fuck has he done with your car?
Yeah. And now he's back in this thing, thinking that he's gonna serve the people again. He chose the wrong side. And he's suffered for it. But I knew that wasn't gonna stop him. I wonder what they'll do to him. What he intends to do. No, he doesn't know. He won't recognize this car.
I imagine you've probably got two cars at home. This is the electric one you rarely pull out of the drive.
Yeah. He doesn't recognize this one. I could just pass by. But I am a bit curious as to what he's gonna do. He's gonna be an obstacle for me. And who's that actually driving the car? Do I recognize her?
I think you would. I think you would know who Carol is, even if it's just in passing. While not the chief of police, she is an officer in good standing in the city, and so just by the nature of cases that have passed by your desk, even though you just handle corporate law more than anything else, it's likely you would have seen her signature affixed to things from time to time.
I don't like the idea of them arriving before me. They're gonna try and get in the way. And so I'm gonna try and either find a better, quicker route, or force myself through traffic to make it before them.
Okay, Sylvia, let's go make a roll. I'm thinking, interestingly, because this is a pressure environment, let's go for coolness.
Right. That's the 12, 13.
So you maintain your cool. You know that there's probably not going to be much of an advantage trying to overtake a police car. That could lead to all kinds of complications that are frankly too mundane and dull to deal with at this particular juncture. Rather, there's got to be a quicker way to Inzio Construction. Hell, if you drive your way down to the docks and make your way along the dock front, yeah, there may be some obstacles in your way, but at least you're not going to have to deal with traffic. So that's what you do. You veer off. Dwayne, by all means, make a perception roll. We've already ascertained that you wouldn't recognize this car, but did you perhaps look in the mirror at the vital moment and see that you're racing someone?
10.
You see a car peel off. It was very close to rear-ending you at one point, but then it just turns off down a side road. You don't recognize the driver. Carol's eyes are on the road ahead. You know, she's obviously checking her mirrors from time to time, but she is not right now concentrating on traffic violations. She looks at you. Are you going to be okay to do this, Dad? I really think you should be back in hospital right now.
I frown, looking at that car for a moment, and then just leaning back in my seat. I'm deeply uncomfortable. The painkillers are helping, but my skin still feels like it's burning, and I'm in constant mild at this point, but still. And I'm in constant pain as I lean back in the seat. I'm grateful that at least I've got some clothes on. They're not my normal clothes, of course. Those were badly burnt. It's not my uniform, but I've at least had some hospital clothes I was able to put on. So I'm sitting there, heavily bandaged like some kind of corpse. One eye barely functioning. No, Carol, but you can't do this. It's not fair for you to do this by yourself. And I'd rather die on my feet than die in the hospital bed. We need to get there before Toby and Sylvia do. I'm gonna try and talk to them. Toby mainly. He's a stupid kid, but I think I can reach him. Fuck knows about Sylvia. But if we don't do this, then Inzio dies, and look around you. That's what Grace's plan is. All this is to bring her down. And I think when she goes down, I think Devonsport goes down as well.
Carol nods. You still don't know how much of this your daughter believes. I mean, who would? Except there's an awful lot of supernatural goings on right now that would validate your histrionic claims. Especially of being involved in it in some way. And so, as you're driving along, you notice a group of people running screaming out of the supermarket. Carol looks to you, she looks across the street, and she says, I'm sorry, Dad, I've got to check this out if there's something going on in there.
Carol, we don't have time.
Listen, I understand it's important. I understand Jessica Inzio is important and this Grace is important. But if there are people being hurt, if there's something going on in there that's going to make a half a dozen people run out of a supermarket screaming, it's my job to ensure that people are kept safe. I'm sorry, Dad.
If we go in there now and deal with that, they will die anyway, Carol. They will all die anyway.
She leaves the key in the ignition, opens the door and says, well, you do what you've got to do, Dad. I've taken you this far, but I can't have this on my conscience. I just can't. And she closes the door and runs off in the direction of the supermarket, radioing. You hear her voice over the car's radio. Calling for backup, an incident at the Devonsport supermarket. Sounds like shots fired. I'm going in alone. Are you driving on?
I stop. The choice is almost impossible to make. I know I'm right. But if I leave her now, then I can't protect her. I can't do anything. I can't even do anything without her, really. If I fucking get there by myself, Toby and Sylvia, they're gonna fucking take me down. A thought occurs to me then, as I almost feel powerless for a moment. In the car, did Carol leave her phone by any chance?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yes, her cell phone is still sticking out of the little compartment underneath the radio.
I grab the phone. A random mad thought occurs to me, because I think the choice I'm going to have to make is stay here. So there's only one more thing I can try and do. Sylvia Spear's number. I know it! Of course I fucking know it. I've had to talk to that woman several times over the last how many years. I'm pretty good with phone numbers. I'm pretty sure I remember it. I could call her. I don't know how to get through to Toby, but I know her phone number. This might be all I can do.
Okay, in that case you call Sylvia. Sylvia, it's up to you if you pick up. You see a number that just registers as Devonport Police Department.
I look at it for a second, and it comes up as I was about to actually send a text myself. I was about to text again my secretary. I was gonna say that a squad car seems to be racing towards the office and it could be trouble. I try to hold them off. And just as I finish the sentence, without sending it, this number comes up. So I'm holding the phone in one hand and it comes. I see it, I hesitate, and then I take it. I do take the call. Spears.
As I'm speaking on the phone, I'm also leaning forward in the cop car because I need to make sure I know what's going on outside. The second I see Carol in danger, I'm going to need to go and help her. But while I'm waiting, I say, Spears.
Dwayne.
Yeah. So, you and Toby nearly there yet?
I'm on my way. And you are too, I assume?
Yeah, of course. I need to stop you both. Is Toby there? Can you put him on the line?
I'm not with Toby.
What? Why not? You going separately?
I had some things to do. My grandson, you know, his funeral was this morning.
Really? How funny, sorry. Right. Interesting then, no Toby. I guess he's getting there a different way. So, ready to get your grandson back?
I just stay silent. This man, I feel, is not worthy of my attention. I'm not gonna let him mess with my mind and what I intend to do right now. But I'll entertain him for a while. Something makes me not hang up. What's your point? What do you want, Dwayne?
You know that whatever Grace gives you won't be your grandson. You know that, right?
And what else do I have to gain from this?
You know, I had a lot of words for Toby. Thing is, I know he cares about shit. Honestly, I've never known if you have. So you've got a point, actually. You don't give a fuck about anyone else, do you? So when Devonport, everyone else dies, including you. You just won't care, will you?
You really think everyone is gonna die here? You think that's what she wants?
Of course it is. What was the reward she gave a loyal Eric, Sylvia? You said it yourself. Eric was a good fucking boy who did what he was told. What was his reward? How did you put it? You get to live here in your own hell. Your words.
Yeah. Well, there are always pawns to be sacrificed.
But that's the point I'm making, Sylvia. You're not gonna get anything back. Maybe she'll give you a little fake corpse that will dance for you or something. It won't be your grandson. You're not gonna get anything when you kill Jessica Inzio. Only death.
I don't expect you to understand. You wouldn't understand. And I, in my mind, I go back to the moment when I was there in the morgue. I was standing with him. And even when he was dead, I felt his presence so strongly. I felt his hand, I felt him next to me, and he healed my hand. And I find myself kind of muttering this last bit out. So you just hear me saying he healed my hand.
Who did?
Oh. He's still here somewhere. My grandson. He's still... Henry's still alive. He's still present. If only I can feel that again. If I can just... He's not really dead.
He is dead, Sylvia. At least in this world, I'm not disputing that he isn't somewhere else. We know hell is real.
Maybe I'd rather be in that world where he is.
Yeah. I suppose if I... In a way, Sylvia, we're not so different. Everything I've done the last 10-20 years, I did for myself. I've only just realized now what that gets you. Hell. So sure, you want to burn in hell and take everyone with you. I suppose words won't stop that happening. Not with you. Toby, maybe, but not you.
As Dwayne roundly condemns you like that, Sylvia, you find yourself approaching Inzio Construction. It's up to you if you want to terminate the call now.
I got someone to meet. I guess I'll see you there. And I hang up. And then I send the text that I'd written.
I sigh. In a way, I don't feel so guilty now that she... Considering she hung up on me, because it means I didn't have to decide whether or not to tell her. Jessica knows she's coming. Nah, she was always a loyal, loyal dog. I at least tried to be disloyal. I suppose nothing I can do. It sucks because I know that she probably will die, but Toby won't get Jessica. He's a fucking trained soldier. It's too late. I look out the window. I look to Carol. She was the only hope we had. She's gonna die here, helping people. I need to stay here. I slowly get out the car, carry my gun, and head to this goddamn shopping mall. Probably to save some stupid people moments before we all die. But I can't leave my daughter. There was no way I could take them out by myself. I needed her. I needed the Force. So I guess... Good luck, Jessica Inzio. We'll see if you can take down Toby and Sylvia. I don't think she can. I guess at least I'll spend my last moments with my daughter. Fuck.
We'll stick with Dwayne for a while longer. As you are entering the supermarket... More people stream past you. They're covered in blood. You can't see any wounds on them. You yourself look like something out of a horror movie, ambling painfully with every step toward the supermarket entrance. The lights within are flickering rapidly like strobes. The intensity of the lights and the speed at which they flicker is really quite painful. You have to squint with your one good eye. You can see why people are running, and it's there is no earthly explanation for what you can see right now. The supermarket, a long building, is descending, but it isn't like it's sinking en masse into a crevice or sinkhole. It's as if the end of the supermarket is the bottom of a long set of steps that you can no longer see, and increasingly, foot by foot, a new step is formed into this descending staircase, just with another chung, and another step forms, and the staircase reaches lower into an infernally hot abyss. You can see Carol stood there at the head of the staircase, gun in her hands, looking down into the darkness, her eyes wide, her mouth open. Occasionally, someone tries to crawl out up the steps. They grab at her, but before they can put their hands on her, they slide back down these steps as if pulled by an energy. She has no words, she has no action she can take. She is just utterly mesmerized by whatever it is she can see down there.
I gaze at the abyss. Hell coming to Devonsport. No, she... While I can still move, she doesn't go to hell that easily. I run forward and just try and grab her, just screaming, Carol! Get back to the car! Get back to the car!
You're doing something heroic. Let's go for a reflexes roll, please.
That's a free.
You lurch and barrel into your daughter. Again, you don't have your full range of motion. You are, after all, suffering burns all over your body right now. And just to step forward an inch is pain. But it's your daughter on the line. It's her life at stake. And so you are able to knock her aside, but in so doing, calamitously, you totter and stumble and fall and start rolling down those steps, just collapsing and falling head over heels. A crash, a crack, a slump, a slide. And you can hear a voice from down there.
Dwayne McLean. So pleased you came back to me so soon. I had thought you would struggle. But a willing sacrifice is always much more zesty than a struggling one.
You feel a great force grip you around your torso, your back, your abdomen, your ribcage. There's nothing there, nothing beyond smoke, but it seems to be this gas that is squeezing the life out of you now. Your daughter, who you can see clambering up onto her hands and knees and still looking down there, seems a million miles away from where you are right now. Up this colossal staircase that only seems to get deeper and deeper. That you now rest at the bottom of with untold bruises and broken bones. Is this where you want Dwayne to meet his end? Or do you want to make one last gasp at life?
I suppose as I'm lifted up, can't even see by what. So weak. So pathetic. I can't just give up. Not until it's too late. I need to save Carol. I just look in her direction, and I try with all my might to... I don't even know what I'm trying to do. I can't do anything other than scream. Carol! Run! I love you!
It's a fine epitaph, and it's a worthy final moment for a deeply flawed character, a deeply flawed human being in the form of Dwayne McLean, whose life is quite literally squeezed from his body as Grace uses you as one of the sacrifices the Shunned needs to pull herself fully into Elysium. You made it easy for her, in some ways. with your sudden last grasp at decency. After committing untold crimes for Jessica, after cheating on your wife, fathering an illegitimate son, murdering a journalist who dug too deep, everything you've done, everything you've concealed, and now you finally find that spark of morality, something that you wouldn't find difficult to justify. And maybe by some measure it gives you a degree of comfort as your ribs splinter, puncture your lungs, your oxygen is forced upward and out of your body, along with a thick gout of blood. There won't be any body to find. It's swiftly snatched backward into Inferno, into the darkness, where chasms like this are opening through buildings throughout Devonsport right now, but you are most certainly a worthy sacrifice. Jessica Inzio's loyal hound, snatched away just at a moment when he was feeling virtuous.
And yet, as one last thing I'll think, that actually will give me some comfort as my body and my soul are ravaged and torn. It occurs to me, I thought you went to hell to get punished. But people like Grace and Eric, they're not being punished. They're fine. So I vow as I die to whatever rules hell, I'll crawl through the fire. I'll crawl through the pain. But one day, somehow, Sylvia Spears, Toby Hoivok, Grace, I'll bring you to hell. And you'll burn with me. One day. One day. And that is the last vow I make before my mind is ravaged by Inferno.
So long, Dwayne McLean.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played The Shunned for Cult Divinity Lost, which was written by Jonas Nelson, with additional material from Petanalo. The Shunned was released as part of the Screams and Whispers scenario collection. Our game master was our dear friend Matthew Dawkins, and the series has been sponsored by the fine folks at Helmgast. The music was made by HM Carceri, featuring a number of collaborations with other artists, and was used with permission from their label, Cryochamber. Check out their website at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for some moody dark ambient. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyschobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, Camilla, Ludwig Manford, Bob Lange, Julian, Cameron, Xavier, and Anton for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as the Champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you again for listening, and remember, death is only the beginning.